course. So we are using a book by Patterson and Hennessy. We're not going to use all of the book, but a significant part of it. And actually, for some of the material, we are going to use a couple, I think maybe two or three of the appendices, which you actually have on CD-ROM. So there is an appendix on, I think, details of the assembly language, the instruction set, and there is an appendix on logic design. That kind of corresponds to what we are doing here. The book assumes that people have extensive background in logic design. And I guess by the time we will finish our look at digital design, I guess we would be there. So what we are doing approximately corresponds to the things in one of the appendices. However, they do it perhaps in a very different way, but it is somewhat similar material. And we are going to go from logic design. We will look at performance issues. We will design a complete CPU, a small one, which will implement a subset of the MIPS instruction set architecture. We will design the data flow part, and then we will design the control part. That is where it becomes interesting. So we will see how we have to select appropriate signal values so that appropriate things happen within the processor. And we will look at other aspects of the processor design. And we will have some, in addition to the exams, we will have some homework assignments and programs and some quizzes.
Quizzes,
there could be some unannounced quizzes. Most of them probably, many of them would be announced. So many of them probably would use the web. But there could be some unannounced ones. Okay, so we were looking at our review of digital design. So last time we looked at some of the basic binary operations, OR, NOR, and I guess inverter you know about. We didn't talk about it last time, but you know about inverters anyway. And we looked at some Boolean algebra. Talking about De Morgan's law. And we were talking about Boolean functions. So we have seen you can specify a Boolean function using a truth table. You can specify a Boolean function using a logical expression. And you can describe it using a what we call logic diagram, which we will sometimes also call a circuit diagram. For our purposes, logic diagram and circuit diagram, they are basically the same things because we are not going to a lower level of circuits. We could, but that's not what we are doing in this course. So for example, if you remember the material, some of the things you did back in 270, if you look at here, you may have seen some transistor level circuit diagrams. So sometimes people say, when people say circuit diagrams, they are thinking of those diagrams. But for us, the logic. So we have seen that we can specify a Boolean function this way, or this way. And they are equivalent. If I give you this, you should be able to get this or this. And sure that I have things that I need in the right order. Okay, and we did not talk about minimization. Last time we are going to talk about it later, perhaps later today. But before that, let us go on to let us look at some more Boolean algebra. Here are some Boolean identities which are very useful. And these are especially useful for simplifying Boolean functions. And here is one. AB bar plus AB is equal to A. And basically, you can look at AB bar and AB as two different pieces of the same truth. So these are the two different complementary pieces of A. And if you put them together, then you get all of A. Now we can, of course, prove this very easily if we start this way. We take out A common, and in here we have B plus B bar. And B plus B bar, we know, is 1, because one of them has to be 1. So that is just, and of course, that is just A. So this is a very useful Boolean identity. Another useful Boolean identity is this one. A plus AB is equal to A. Now, if this was ordinary algebra, then this would not make sense. But this is, of course, Boolean algebra, where everything evaluates into either a 0 or 1, into a false or truth. So here, AB is basically a part of A. So if you add AB to A, you are not adding anything extra to A, so it just stays A, and of course you can prove it using Boolean algebra also. You can write A as A and it does 1. And that is A. Since 1 plus anything is just 1. These two are quite useful. Now let us look at some higher level of functional blocks. Now, I had mentioned that, about Boolean functions. You can have any kind of Boolean functions, but there are some Boolean functions that are especially interesting, that are common use. And these are the Boolean functional blocks. And we are here going to look at functional blocks like decoders, multiplexers, full adders, and some of the other ones. So let us first start with a decoder. decoder is actually a general term. So anything that transforms something from one form to another form can be called a decoder. But here we are specifically talking about a n to 2 raised to n decoder. And here there's, for example, a 2 to 4 decoder. Now we can describe it by a truth table. Let us say we have two inputs, A and B, and the outputs are, let us call the outputs perhaps D0, D1, D2, and D3. And let's assume that this is specified in this way. So with a 2 to 4 decoder, one of the four outputs is selected at a time. And selected output depends on which particular input combination it is. Now let us assume that D0 is selected when the two inputs are 0, 0. And when you have 0, 1, we are selecting D1. So the selected one is 1 and the other is 0. So in this case, this output is 1 and all other outputs are 0. It is also possible to have a different kind of decoder where the selected output is 0 and all other outputs are 1. So that is also often used, and it depends on what kind of choices we have to specify. Now you can easily implement a 2 to 4 decoder using a few gates. Now let us try to implement this. Notice that D0 is 1 when A is 0 and B is 0. So if you would write a logical expression for D0, you will say D0 is equal to A bar B bar. And that is how we will design this. So here is D0. So A bar B bar. Let us say here we have A and here we have B. Where by these circles, I mean you are using inverters. And similarly for D1, we want A bar B, A bar B. And D2, we want A bar. And for D3, we want AB. So here is A. And here is B. So this is a 2-to-4 decoder. Now sometimes we will indicate it in this way. So here we have AB and here we have the four outputs, D0 to D3. If you have to show the decoder as a block, then we would do it this way. Let us look at the next functional block, a multiplexer. In short, we will call it a MUX. And now in case of a decoder, for this equator, we can say that the selected output is 1. Now, the function of a multiplexer is such that it selects one of the inputs and connects it to the output. So here is a truth table. Let us say we have some inputs. Let's call them A and B. And here is the output. Or let me show this table in a, using a short form. Okay, let me show it this way. Let me organize it differently. S is the select line that specifies the selection. And when S is 0, output is equal to input A. And when S is 1, output is equal to line B. So S here is the select line. Now we can design the circuit in this way. So here we have two AND gates. So we will either let A go through or we will let B go through to the output, which we have here. Depending on whether the select line is 0 or 1, so when select line is 0, you want this to go through. So here's the line, select line S. So when this select line S is 0, that becomes 1 here. And that means whatever this is, we will have, we have A here. Let's say this is 0. So here we will have A, and here we will have 0, and output will be obviously in A. So this we can call a 2-to-1 multiplexer. Now we can have other kinds of multiplexers. For example, now let me first show a function, a block level representation. We will sometimes show a multiplexer like that in this way. Here is the output. Here is A. Here is B, and here is the select line. Now, multiplexer is a general concept. So you can have a general type of a multiplexer. For example, you can have four inputs. So here you have the four inputs. Let's call them A, B, C, and D. And here is the output. Now, in this case, to select one of the four output lines, one of the four input lines, you have to have appropriate number of select lines. So here, you need two lines, two select lines. And now, as you know, by this we are implying that here we have two lines. So here we have the select lines S1, S0. And perhaps this is selected when you have, these are 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1. So depending on the value here, one of these would be selected and would be connected to the output. Now it could be even a multiplexer which selects sources of any kind of bit. Here, these are assumed to be 1 bit wide. But you can have something that is more general. For example, you could have something that looks like this. You could have perhaps 32 bits come in. So you have four sources. These could be four registers. A register, B register, C register, D register. And you could select one of these four registers and connect it to the output, which now would be 32 bits. And how many lines we would need for selection here? We would still need two lines for selection because with 2 bits, you can specify one of two possible choices. So here we have the select lines. So that is about the multiplexer, which is the other functional block. Next, let us look at a full adder. Now there is something called a half adder. How many of you have seen a half adder before? Okay, so I guess you saw that in 270?
Or 60.
270, yeah. 270
and
then
370 both. Right. Oh, I see.
And it's also in 460.
Oh, okay. So, anyway, so half adder is something that adds 2 bits and generates a some bit and a carry out. In case of a full adder, it is a complete building block, so it adds 2 bits and it also adds, here we have 2 bits, and let us assume that the 2 bits coming in are A sub I, B sub I. Now this could be part of an array, as we will see. And you could have an input coming in, which let us call C sub I, and the outputs are a sum bit and a carry out. Let's call it I plus 1. So this is what a full adder should do. We can start by writing a truth table. All 8 combinations. And let me have a line here for alignment. And as you know, when you add 0 plus 0 plus 0, so sum is 0, carry is 0, sum is 1, carry is 0. Sum is 1, carry is 0, sum is 0, carry F1, and so on. And in the last case, because 1 plus 1 plus 1 is 3, that means sum is 1 and carry out is 1 bit. Now you can easily, now this is a Boolean function, and you can implement this Boolean function. You can write down, you can construct a circuit and it will have these three inputs and these two outputs. So he like here, and you will have some gates here, and you can implement it using the regular logic design procedure. Now you can design it without using minimization, or if you want, you can use minimization and come up with an optimal implementation. So we are later going to look at possible minimization of this after we have taken a look at the Karman maps. But let me show you how we would construct a ripple gather, and let us make it a 4-bit one, or maybe we can call it a parallel binary error, so we can connect these full errors . So here, in the beginning, the carry in should be 0, and here we have A0 coming in, and here we have B0, and here we have the sum bit coming out, and let us have 4 of them. So if you have a 32-bit adder, and if you have a simple design like this, then things would be connected in this way. Let's call this C0. So here we have a 4-bit ripple error, or parallel binary error. We can do it by either means. And basically we have a block. Another way of representing this, sometimes people would represent it this way, a full error. So here you have 4 bits of A lines, and here you have 4 bits of B lines, and here is the error, and here you have the S lines, 4 bits, and here is the carry in and carry out. This is could be connected to 0 if there is nothing coming in into the least significant bit. Any questions or comments? Okay, now let's look at two-level logic. Any combinational function can be implemented as a two-level logic. Now, when we use the term two-level, we are not counting the inverters. Now, inverters, perhaps we should count the inverters also, but when we say two-level logic, we are neglecting the inverters. So, you can always implement, regardless of how big it is, you can always have a two-level logic implementation. There are two basic forms. You can have other forms also, but these are the two basic forms. In formal terminology, they are called the two canonical forms. You have the sum of products form, which is SOP. And then you have the product of sums for POS. And I guess the easiest way to represent the two would be to look at a quick example. So I will start with a Boolean function, and I will show you how you can implement it in sum of products form and in product of sums form. So let's look at this example. So let us specify this function using this truth table. Sorry about that. 0010010011. I guess I should organize the tables according to the binary count. That way they are easier to remember. Theoretically speaking, the truth tables could be organized in any order. It should not make a difference. But to make sure that we can read them easily, and to make sure we have not forgotten any combination, it is convenient to order them in this order. And let us assume that there's a function which is given, which looks like this, 1011. Let me draw this for alignment. 1010. And we have to implement this in a two-level implementation. Let's start with sum of products form. So first let's try the SOP form. So can I write F equal to A bar B bar? F is 1 when A is 0, B is 0, and C is 0. And this one, which is A bar B C bar, and then this one, A bar B C, plus this one, A B bar C bar, plus this term here, A B C bar. Okay, I should make sure that I have not forgotten anything. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do we have 5 of them? Yeah, so that at least the number of terms is correct. So this is the sum of products form. So this is, these are the product terms, product term, product term, and the whole thing is the sum of products. So that's why we call it the sum of products form. Now there is another way, which is this product of sums form. POS. Now for product of sums form, the easier way to get something in product of sums forms is to first work on the complement of the function and then take care of it by using De Morgan's theorem. So I will do this in two steps. So in first step, I will get an expression for complement of f. So when is the complement of f 1? So this is one case when complement of f is 1, right? And that happens to be A bar B bar C plus this one. A B bar C plus this. A B C. Okay. So are these two expressions correct? I hope I haven't missed any bars there. Okay, so this is, but of course it is really F that we want to implement, not F bar. So to get F, I take a complement of the whole thing. And I simplify it using De Morgan's theorem. So things look like this. Okay, and I apply De Morgan's theorem once. So I have it looking like this. Everyone agrees so far? And then I try De Morgan's theorem again. And when I apply De Morgan's theorem here, I'm going to get complement of A bar, which is just A, plus complement of B bar, which is just B, and complement of C, which is C bar. Right? And similarly for other terms. So A bar plus B plus C bar, A bar plus B bar plus C bar. Okay, let me double check and make sure I have done this correctly. F bar is 1 when we have 0, 0, 1. 1, 0, 1, and 1, 1, 1, which is what I have here. And so, and I complemented both sides. So here we have F, and here we have complement of the whole thing. And this I have, by one application of De Morgan's theorem, I got this. And by another application of the De Morgan's theorem, I got this. So here we say F is equal to this. And here we say F is equal to this. They are both equivalent, right? They both implement the same function, but in two different forms. So this is the sum of products form, and this is the product of sums form. So this is sum, sum, sum. So here's the product of sums form. Okay, which one do you like better? Sum of products or product of sums? Why?
It's easier.
Yeah. It's
easier. Chances to mess up.
Yeah, you don't have to apply the Morgan's theorem, that's true. So most of the time we tend to write this without too much thinking. However, in many cases, what you want is a simpler implementation that uses fewer number of gates. And sometimes this will give you a simpler implementation. Sometimes this will give you a simpler implementation. Now if you count how many gates you are going to need. Okay, let's assume you're not counting inverters. So you need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 AND gates, right? And one OR gate. So this is going to need 5 AND gates and one OR gate, right? Okay, how about this one here? How many gates you will need?
3.
You will need 3. Okay, OR gate, OR gate, OR gate. 3 OR gates, right? three OR gates and one AND gate. We need the AND gate for performing the product of the sums, right? So this is actually going to take fewer gates, right? So sometimes one implementation is better, sometimes other implementation is better. Now a lot of times we will just use sum of products form, basically because it is quicker. Although if you are a designer, then as a designer, usually you want to optimize things. And then you have to, you should look at different options and see which one gives you a better design. But most of the time, this is the form that we will use, but keep this in mind also. Okay, now let us...
why is it called two-level logic again?
Oh, why is it called two-level logic? Okay, this is a good question. Why do we call it two-level logic? Okay, let us implement these. Let me implement first the top one. F equal to B bar, B bar, C bar. How many terms I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I need 5 of these. And I'm going to OR all of them. And then I have A bar, B, C, A bar, B, C bar, and then I have A bar, B, C, A bar, B, C, and then I have the A, B bar, C bar, A, B bar, C bar, and then I have A, B, C bar, A, B, C bar. So here is A. And then B, here is B, and let us put in C. Now for convenience, I have shown the circuit this way. Now notice, let me mention that we have not done any optimization here. We don't have any unnecessary terms here, but we haven't done any trivial minimization, which we will come to when we look at Carnot maps. And also notice that I may be using too many inverters here. Notice I'm using this inverter here to form A bar, and I'm using another inverter here to form another A bar. I could have shared the inverters. So I could have come up with a better design if I wanted to minimize the number of inverters also. And in fact, usually we would do that. But right now for, a simple illustration, to be able to draw this quickly and conveniently, I'm doing it this way. Okay, now this is our sum of products implementation. And now let me get our product of sums implementation. Now we are answering your question, why do we call it two level? Now can you see why we call this two level? So here's one level, and here's another level. So this is two-level logic. Now this is also two-level logic. Let's try that. A plus B plus C bar. A plus B plus C bar. A bar plus B plus C bar. A bar plus B plus C bar. A bar plus B bar plus C bar. A bar plus C bar. Have I gotten everything right? I hope so. Okay. And then, I should have been more careful. Okay, I guess you already got this circuit. So let me just erase part of that. I hope you don't mind. Here is A. And here is B. And let me squeeze in C here. Here is C. And finally one, as we said, one and A. Now here of course we have an order. So it looked like this before I erased it. So this is a product of some implementation. So which one do you like better? In this particular case, this one uses fewer gates. But notice that this is two level. So signals come here, signals come through these gates, and then signals come through this. So signals have to travel through two levels of logic. This is a two-level implementation. This is a two-level implementation. So they are both two-level implementation. Now, if you would assume as a quick approximation that all the gates have equal delays, the signals have to travel through two levels of delays, right? Signals come here. Come here, one level of delay, another level here. So for example, let us say if each gate, I guess we're going to talk about propagation delay later. Maybe we should save the discussion until we come to propagation delays. But sometimes to get an approximate idea of the delays involved, we count the number of levels of logic signals have to travel through, and that will give us an idea of what kind of delays we are looking at.
So in this case, it would be the same?
In this case, it would be the same. That's true. Two levels of logic here. Two levels here, two levels here. And we are assuming that we are not counting inverters. So if you were counting inverters also, then add a little bit of delay for the inverters. Now let us see a device which we call programmable logic array. Short PLA. In a way, it is basically the same idea. A PLA is a general two-level logic block. The main thing about PLA is that it is on a chip. If you take a look at a PLA on a chip, you will see a rectangular array. So it is laid out in form of an array with a couple of components. So let's look at programmable logic array idea. So basic idea behind this is that let us say you have a number of inputs. So let us say here you have a number of inputs, A, B, C, whatever. So first you go through a block which we can call the AND array, or we can call it AND plane. So these are the inputs. Now this PLA uses the sum of products form. So first we are going to form the products. So here you have a bunch of AND gates, and these AND gates are going to give you a number of product terms. So these things here are the product terms. And then, so these are the product terms. And then we OR the product terms appropriately. And here we are going to get the outputs. Notice, in a PLA you have multiple outputs. So a PLA is a more general type of circuit. So many inputs, and you have many outputs. This, of course, was a special case. You have many inputs, but only a single output. Whereas this is more general, because you have many outputs. And let us say that this is the OR array, or the OR plane, some people call it. So this is the structure of a PLA. And you can specify a PLA in this way. Let us show an example, a PLA. Let us assume we have three inputs and three outputs, which would actually be a rather small PLA. Typically, PLAs are much bigger. So you could have maybe 10 inputs, 20 inputs, 20 outputs or something. But it doesn't matter. The basic idea is the same whether it's small or large. And now in a PLA, it is not necessary to specify all possible product terms. But here, later on we are going to talk about optimization. So let me give you here an example of a PLA which is not optimized. And later we will see how we optimize this PLA. So here is a PLA which is not optimized. Okay, let me make sure I have the 8 rows there. Okay, here we have a PLA. Now later we will consider the problem of optimizing it, but let us first consider the problem of implementing this. Now notice, a PLA basically is a two-level sum of products implementation. Now let me show you a diagram. And now do you want this diagram to be kind of diagrams that you're used to, or you want to see it in a form that is more often used to represent PLAs? Well, let's try it both ways, just to see the difference. I can draw it in this way, and I guess is this for this a different example, I think. So I should maybe not look at this here. Okay. Okay, that is going to be a little ugly, but let's try it. So, okay, we have here 8 product terms, right? So let's go ahead and form 8 product terms, and maybe I'll make draw it a little small. So, and 8 product terms are 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 1. Am I going to have enough space there? Keep them small. 100, 101, 110, and 111. So I have 8 and A's there, and here is 8. Here is B. And here is C. So I have the, so this AND array, so these are the AND gates in there. And we have now formed the product terms. And we have to pick up selected product terms and form the 3 outputs. So let's first form the output D. And D is going to need, now this has to be a big OR gate. With 4 into 6 inputs. So we have the second one there, and the fourth one. Okay. I hope this doesn't get too messy. This is the second one and the fourth one. I'll try to keep it clean. And then the rest of the 4, all 4. Incidentally, this example is slightly different from the diagram I have in my notes. So watch out carefully in case I make a mistake. So just point out, help us as we go along. So here we have successfully formed D, right? And similarly, we want to form E and F. E is going to, he doesn't have the first 2, but all others are in there. And the last one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. F. So there we have, let me skip the first one. So I have the second and the third. Second and third. And then I have the fourth one. Is it? No, the fifth one. Is it this one here?
Yes.
Okay, we got that one. And then the last 2. So these are the OR gates which are in here, OR array. So this is a two-level P array. But the thing is, this diagram is fine, but it is too inconvenient to draw. I think you will agree, right? So we have to have a nicer way of drawing the P arrays. And it turns out that we can draw P arrays in a way which is not only convenient, it also closely follows how PLAs are actually laid out on a chip. So let us see how PLA diagrams should really be drawn. Okay, let me erase this. Okay, now here is a real PLA diagram. This is how they are drawn. So notice that here we have A, and we found complement of A. So we have here, we have A and A bar available, and here we have B, and we have, I hope you can see it from the back. I'm trying to draw a little too small. Can everyone see it? I hope it's not too small. And C. Okay, now we have got, so we have got all the inputs. We have gotten complemented values of the inputs. And now we can form the product terms. And we have 8 product terms. So product term 1 is 0, 0, 0. 0, 0, 0. Now here, this is not a complete logical diagram, but this kind of goes down to the electrical level. So basically, this means that you are taking AND of this and this and this. You are taking AND of A bar, B bar, and C bar. So here, this is one product term here, right? And similarly, we form other product terms. So 0, 0, 0, and we have 0, 0, 1, and then we have 0, 1, 0, is that right? Yeah, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, right? Everyone following me so far? And then we've got 3. Okay, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, and then 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1. We need 8 of them. 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0. And 111. Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong place. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. 111. And these are our product terms. So basically, these are the product terms which we have here. So we have these 8 product terms, which here, and here are the 8 product terms coming and going into the OR array. So now these product terms are coming here, and we need to OR them. We need to OR them appropriately. So now the first output D includes the second one and the fourth one and all the others. Now remember, because of the electronics involved, this is going to be equivalent to an OR gate. So it is going to OR this, 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 and this product term. And then E includes this one and this one, third and fourth, these two. and then all of these. And then if includes the product terms, not the first one, but the next two, and then 1011. 1011. Okay, this is 1011. So there is our complete PLA. And notice in this PLA, we have two parts. This is the part which performs the AND operation. So this is the AND array. Some people call it AND plane. I forget what the book calls it. Let's call it AND array. Because it does the AND operation. And here, this is the OR array. It performs the OR operation. So this diagram and that diagram are they represent the same thing. This is actually how they are laid out. So if you look at the chip and see, if you can see the photograph, you will see a rectangular array which will look more or less like this. Any questions on or comments on PLAs, programmable logic arrays? Okay.
So when you say programmable logic array, does that mean that on a chip this can be changed?
Oh, that's a good question. Why are they called programmable logic array? And the reason is, why are they called programmable logic array? Well, these things, yeah, I'm glad you asked. PLA. So the programmable logic arrays, now there are a few different types. So there is one that you buy. So programming means, remember those cross points I had shown, these points here. So in some places you have the cross points, in some places you don't have the cross points. And that, in some cases, corresponds to the last manufacturing step. So the programming actually occurs during manufacturing for some of them. So this is, these are, let's call them the factory program PLAs. So when you buy them, you cannot change them because they were programmed during the last manufacturing step. And then there are some that you can program once in the lab. Programmable in the lab. And they are called
is this like Flash?
Well, Flash is kind of a step ahead. So, so these are programmable ones.
So you belong to some sort of link?
Programmable ones. So basically, there are some links. And in your equipment, you do something that gets rid of some links. And that could be done once. And then, there are some that are programmable and erasable. Erasable PLAs. Now the erasable PLAs, you can program once, and then you can erase the program, and you can program them again. So they're sometimes called, the one version are called UV erasable. UV erasable PLAs. So you expose them to ultraviolet light, and your programming will be gone, and then you can reprogram them. And then there's another kind, okay, there's another kind, they are electrically erasable. Now this is kind of inconvenient. I don't know if they are still common, but they used to be common at one time. So they had a little opening on the chip, and you take the chip and put it under an ultraviolet lamp. Has anyone seen those things?
Long time ago.
Oh, okay. So, how long do you have to keep them under the lamp?
The ones I mainly did were prongs, and it was like 15 minutes in this little light box.
Right, okay. So you put them in, and then they get erased, and then you can program them again. The electrically erasable ones, you can erase them electrically, so they don't need to be taken out. And so here you are getting kind of close to your memory chip where you can electrically write and read. So they can be of different types depending on the manufacturing technology, but logically speaking, in terms of design, they all look like this. So basically, at an intersection, either there is a link, for example, here the dot, that means there is a link, or there is no link. And how you get this presence or absence of a link, that is technology dependent. That depends on what kind of PLA it is. Now here, again, I should mention, so far we haven't talked about optimization, which is an important issue. Okay, I guess we're supposed to stop at 3:25. So we still have a few minutes. Sometimes it's hard for me to calculate when I should stop because I keep my watch 5 minutes ahead. I'm hoping it is 5 minutes ahead. Because I haven't synchronized it. I guess periodically I should synchronize it. Usually the digital watches, they still synchronize rather nicely, except when you go on a trip. You change the time and you go there and come back, and because you do it quickly, and so they lose synchronization. So I forget if I have done it to this watch here. But okay, so a programmable logic array is basically, it is two-level logic, right? So a programmable logic array is nothing but a bunch of AND gates and OR gates, except when it comes to layout, it is laid out in a regular structure. That is what makes them special. And it's convenient to lay out because they just are a rectangular form. And now, next thing we want to do is to talk about optimization. But before we talk about optimization, maybe I should talk about the read-only memories, the ROMs. And the read-only memories are combinational blocks. Does that make sense? And remember, the definition of a combinational block is that a combinational block does not have memory, right? You apply the inputs and outputs depend on whatever the input is. And that is basically what ROMs are. So you cannot store information. So the ROMs, they come pre-programmed, so you cannot write anything into them when they are in normal use. So basically, from that point of view, a ROM is basically just a combinational circuit. You apply some inputs, and you get some appropriate outputs out. So next time, we are going to talk about a little bit about ROMs. And you will see that a ROM, conceptually is kind of an extension of the PLA. It's more or less the same thing. But later when we will talk about optimization of the PLA, you will see a PLA, it doesn't, you don't have to have all the product terms, and that is where you have the advantages of a programmable logic array over a ROM. So we'll see that next one.